Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to our good news segment. And by the way, this is a good news segment. For many of you, you've heard me talk about my favorite uncle, who one day he looked like the pillar of health, and one day he suffered a massive heart attack. And so for many of us, we scratched our heads back then because we didn't have what we have today. We didn't know what Dr. Charles Davidson is going to talk with us about today. The advances that have been made in treating heart disease are pivotal. You know, we used to look at this as a fait accompli. Now we look at this and we have information, advancements, innovation, technology, and I get to talk to people like Dr. Davidson at Northwestern Medicine so that we can look at what cardiovascular, that word means in the 21st century. Dr. Davidson, it's great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me here today.
Probably doing a lot of these interviews. It's a very important topic. But I want to ask you a very specific question. Several decades ago, when my uncle passed away very suddenly, when my mom passed away in 1992, pretty much the way it was described was her heart exploded. I don't think any of us as family members had a clue. Didn't understand what it was about, didn't understand the symptoms. That was then, this is now. What have the advancements in understanding what great heart health is, what heart disease is, what have we learned, and what are you all doing to bring the conversation even further forward?
So thank you for that introduction. The important advances in treatment of coronary artery disease in particular, which it sounds like that's the what you're describing, is that we really are looking at how to prevent these sudden heart attacks, how to prevent the loss of heart muscle. And what we've been able to do with that, and it's patient education. So it's shows like these, it's just critical to getting the word out. We have treatments and we have lifestyle modifications that can help, but people have to understand what those are and actually take action with that. And so one of the things that is always the simplest thing is smoking. It's just something that we know increases the risk of heart attacks by over 20-fold from those that don't smoke. And vaping, for example, which is being falsely advertised as a safer alternative, really needs to be understood that these carry the same risks with these patients. People with a family history of heart disease need to know what their risk factors are. What does their cholesterol look like? Is a hypertension, if they have high blood pressure, is that being treated properly? If they have diabetes, is that being treated properly? All of these things can affect the incidence of heart attack, stroke, and death. And what we've learned with is that we need to be more stringent in the treatment of these to actually get actual prevention. Back in the early 90s, which you described, we were not as aggressive at treating cholesterol or blood pressure. And numbers that we would have accepted then, we would never accept today because we know the impact of these treatments on their outcome. Also, a healthy lifestyle. And out in the Northwest, people tend to be more healthy than they are maybe in the Midwest. But, you know, regular exercise, diet, all of those things can make those risk factors get better and also in turn affect your risk of heart attack, stroke, or death.
And thank you for kind of bringing us up to date, because I think that this is a great place for us to really start to really truly understand where we were and where we are today. And that's really pivotal for today's conversation. You know, let's dig into a little bit of information about this. First of all, we don't talk about heart disease. We don't talk about how to treat the heart as much as I believe we should, or as much as I think we used to. And I don't think that things have changed all that much, but I'm not the expert. You are. How many people are getting are falling into this category of vulnerability, let's say, and where are we with generational differences? So, for example, every time you turn on the news, somebody young is being featured as suffering from heart attack or heart disease. Give us a breakdown of where we are with this today.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I think what we have learned is that patients tend to ignore symptoms until they're more severe. And particularly in young people, there's a little bit of a denial factor going on there. Also, the fact of an unhealthy lifestyle often starts at a younger age. And I think what we've seen also is there's a more sedentary population that's growing up right now. People are spending more time with, you know, on their phones, texting, iPads, television, video games, and that's going to add to the incidence of coronary artery disease. So to me, it's early detection, early treatment, lifestyle modification, and getting that word out to people that it's really important to define these habits early in life and then carrying those through. It's more difficult for people to pick up new habits, you know, teaching an old dog new tricks at age 50s and 60s. They'll do it if it's a life-altering event, but sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But 30 years of wear and tear are hard to reverse.
Yeah. One thing I will say, and I don't know if you agree with me or not on this, Dr. Davidson, but one thing I must say is if you are watching TV, you are tuning in to more programs that have to do with doctors, hospitals, and they are number one programs. They're not like the old school doctor shows that you can be, you know, like a doctor in the country. These are like they're taking you into the operating room. They're holding up, you know, anatomically correct pictures of hearts. Are we getting educated that way, or is it a little bit too much Hollywood and not enough of education would, so to speak?
Well, it does tend to focus on the spectacular and the wow factor. It's not as exciting to talk about, did you, you know, take your blood pressure medicine today? Is your LDL cholesterol under 80 now? You know, it's not quite as sexy. It's more of the wow factor that makes it onto TV. I think some of the technologies we're using right now do have a lot of wow factor, and those are for more advanced stages of disease, you know, when valvular coronary disease get, but the fact that we don't have to do open heart surgery for valve problems or coronary problems is very exciting. But that does make it to TV, but some of the early prevention discussions are obviously not what Marcus Welby was talking about, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah, right. And by the way, if you do happen to watch The Good Doctor, not only do you get to see what's going on, but they put up like a digital blueprint of it. So, you know, the other day, heart valve disease was a topic. Let's talk about it. What are the symptoms? Because, you know, many of us in my family, we have beaten our heads up against the wall trying to figure out if we could have done something different, especially with my mom and my uncle. They didn't look like candidates, right? So can we talk about the symptoms, and then let's talk about where do we go from there, diagnosis and treatment, so to speak.
Sure. Heart valve disease typically, particularly if it's a blocked valve, like aortic stenosis, the stenotic valves where there's not enough blood getting out, typically present with symptoms of shortness of breath, chest discomfort, and can be ankle swelling, fatigue. Those are the symptoms we see. With leaking valves, particularly in the mitral valves connecting the top and bottom of the heart, those symptoms typically don't show up till later in the course of the disease unless the patient is extremely active. So leaking valves are something that require better vigilance and better oversight. But the stenotic ones tend to present with symptoms. And when they do present with symptoms, the first thing that should be done is usually an echocardiogram, an ultrasound of the heart, which will give us a lot of information on how the heart muscle works and how well the valves are working. If it's of a mild or moderate degree of blocking or leaking, then those can typically be treated with medications and some of the lifestyle modifications we talked about, those salt diets and other things. But if it becomes severe and it's symptomatic, then we have to move on to advanced therapies. And what's exciting is that, for example, aortic stenosis, 75% of the patients at Northwestern, we now treat with a catheter tube from the leg, no general anesthesia, replace the valve and home within a day or two. And that, you know, that's been a huge innovation for that population of patients.
You know, we're looking at this and we're talking about it, but this is a very important month. And certainly I want to make sure everybody has more information. Where can people go to find out more? Let's start with that.
So our website, heart.nm, northwesternmedicine.org, has good patient stories, patient education, prevention, diagnosis, treatments that are commercially available, and treatments that are still investigational, only in a few centers in the country. Important for patients to recognize if you think you have a problem or have been diagnosed with a problem and you've been told you need something or don't need something, to often seek a second opinion, make sure that what you feel you're getting is the proper treatment, and then make your best informed decision on your health care.
All right. So let's just take a sneak peek at something that many people think about when we start to talk about, you know, hearts and heart replacement and valve replacement. We always think about the bionic woman. I actually got to interview her. But we think about this. We think about some of the fantastic, new, innovative things that are happening. Give us a sneak peek on where we are with things like that. Replacement, nanotechnology, for example. I have a friend at, you know, at Harvard that's using nanotechnology to treat and kill parasites and Lyme disease. So where are we? We talk about the future as if it's like 50 years from now. But I mean, are we like in the future? Like, is it now?
Well, what has been extremely exciting is that we're now doing heart valve repair through leg veins or leg arteries, depending on the valve. In fact, in the last month, I've done two of the very first ever done in the U.S. repairs of a tricuspid valve with a clip. And so these are patients that would have traditionally either had surgery or just been very sick and unable to receive therapies that would help them. The medical therapies are ineffective. So even as we speak today, we're doing early human work with new technologies that can be transformative in the patient's quality of life and hopefully in their mortality as well. And these are really being developed, as you said, as we speak, these are going on. What's been exciting for us in the United States is typically a lot of this early work was being done in other countries, and we were a little slow to adapt here. And what we've seen is a real transformation with our FDA in trying to get technologies available to patients in the U.S. earlier on. And we think that that's helped in benefiting the patients and hopefully in moving the technology along quicker to help more patients.
I love it. I know you've got to run off to a full day of interviews and conversations. I want to ask you this question. As you speak to our listeners and we talk to them about what is in their control to do, lifestyle changes, other kinds of care for the heart, having spells that cause you to feel dizzy, what would you say to our listeners? What would you say to them today to say, look, this can be prevented, but I recommend that you do A, B, C, D? What would those be?
So I would say if you have a family history of heart problems, you should receive a full screening evaluation. That goes without question, whether it be heart valve disease or heart artery disease. Make sure that you've had a full evaluation, probably been seen by a cardiologist. It may not be that you need regular visits, but let's get a full evaluation. If you've been diagnosed with a heart problem, let's do the risk factor modifications that we've talked about: smoking cessation, diet control, cholesterol and hypertension management, good exercise. All of those things should be thought about. And if you've been diagnosed with a problem and you know you're in a more severe zone and you may need treatment or not, and you're trying to decide on what that treatment is, to make sure you've had all the informed decision presented to you by hopefully multiple providers, and you and your family make what you think is the best decision for you at that point in time.
Wow. Thank you. One last question. What's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today?
I'd say that it's a very exciting time for heart disease as far as helping people live longer. There's a great opportunity for people to live into their 80s, 90s, and beyond at this point in time. And I just want patients to be as well educated and be as informed as possible so that they can participate in their health care.
Wow. I want to thank you. Thank you so much for getting the word out there. And again, hit us with that website.
It's heart.nmnorthwesternmedicine.org.
I love it. Let's take a short break, everybody. Lots of information. Please go find out. Please get educated. Please get informed. We'll be right back.
Join the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each month as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia Stephanie is a spiritual teacher, passionate speaker, published author, and founder of the Empower Network. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Tap into the wisdom of animals, angels, and masters with Darcy Pariso on Animal Soul Wisdom Radio. Tune in monthly as Darcy brings insights on how to better understand and deepen our relationships with animals. Working with light and pureness of ancient techniques, Darcy, healer, animal communicator, and medium, is here to guide you through this process and provide inspiration to move forward. For more information about working with Darcy, visit darcypariso.com.
Are you ready to consistently tap into the transcendent place where your whole being is available to you and access a higher level of ability and performance physically, cognitively, emotionally, and effectively? Then join us on ClearSpeak Talk Radio with Dr. Jeanette Wolf on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in every fourth Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Go to JeanetteWolf.com, Quantum Body, to sign up for your whole health mentoring.
People often ask, what does it mean to thrive? On Thrive by Jen Radio, it means body confidence, mind fulfillment, and soul synchronicity. Create synchronicity with God and learn as Jen shares action steps and real stories that will inspire you to be unstoppable in fulfilling your purpose. Tune in live each Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit JenniferZellup.com to thrive with Jen.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
Have you been searching for a push to step out and share your gifts with the world? Allow Charlene Hess to empower you to start shedding the layers of your ego that are holding you back and begin feeling connected to your heart so that you can shine your unique divine light and share your gifts with the world. Tune in to the Charlene Hess Show, Living on Your Heart's Edge, every third Friday at noon Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit CharleneHess.com.
Hey, everybody. I've been telling you about this. So y'all have heard me talk about my Southern roots. Now, most of you know me as a girl born in the Bronx. But some of you know that I had the very great fortune to have a stepmom that was from the Deep South. What'd that mean to me down in Virginia? What does that mean? That means that I got a couple of doses of both Catholicism and Southern Baptist everything. And so today I am talking with, get ready everybody, Connie Harshore joining us and Pastor Reginald Davis of the First Baptist Church. And what we are talking is we are kicking it up new school. Why? Because it's all about freedom. Welcome. Thank you both for joining me here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for inviting us back.
I'd love to have you here. You know, look, I learned some things thanks to my mom and my introduction to a whole new of appreciating higher power, higher order, higher anything. I also learned something else. I learned something very close to and near and dear to my heart, that there is no such thing as a divide except what we create here. We weren't born to divide. We were born to be together. And yet we have got to continuously remind ourselves that harmony is not just a word. What do you think about that? Who would like to go first?
Pastor Bay,
well, I think that Connie Hawshaw can go first.
Go, Connie. Go, Connie.
Well, I tell you, I am blessed with being colorblind. So this whole idea of divisiveness, I don't get, first of all, because you are absolutely right. When we come into this world, we don't know that there is a line. We are taught that. And so what I am grateful for is Pastor Davis's leadership in guiding us and the community to bring awareness around the issues of race, and focusing more on us as a human race, because we actually have more that we have in common than divides us. And our history is a great place to start. We are Americans. We're not, you know, and if we think about it that way, and also, you know, not to play second seat, we're Christians. And
that's
so
right.
We think of ourselves as a human race, not so much as one or the other or us and them.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, I make a statement out there and people look at me and they see this white girl and I make this statement and they think, you're just making stuff up. No, I'm not making stuff up. I happen to have the very, very fortune to have on my mom's side of the family. What did you say? Literally did not see color in any way. When we did Sunday service, and my family opened up that front lawn, there was a patchwork quilt of beautiful people coming together. I have got to ask you, as we approach this day, this, you know, this beautiful Black History Month, and we approach what we have right here now coming up, how in God's name did we get this way, Pastor?
Well, I think that as both of you all have said, we have just been socialized. We have been conditioned, taught a certain way. And so what we have to do, we have to point out the miseducation that we have been taught. When we come in this world, we were born to be together. The scripture says from one blood, he made all nations of people from one blood.
Yeah.
So if you got the same type of blood type that I do, then if something happens to me or you, then we can use that blood to preserve life. We don't discriminate against the blood. So the point is that as we look out in God's green world, we look at this beautiful world, we see all kinds of diversity, all kinds of colors. And that's for our enjoyment. And so when we talk about diversity, that ought to be celebrated, not just tolerated, ought to be celebrated. So this is why we have the bell here at First Baptist Church, because we want to ring this bell to remind people we are all humans. We all have the same blood. And so therefore, let us not judge each other by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. And so therefore, life would be mighty, mighty bland if all of the flowers were one color, if all of the trees were one color. So we have to understand that all of this beautiful colors and diversity that we see in nature, that's the same way God made us, not to divide us, but to bring us together as one human race to the glory of God.
Yeah. Wow. And let's talk about the bell. And let's talk about what Sunday is going to represent and how people can find out more about it. Because what I hope that we could do, not metaphorically, because I think we got way too many metaphors and not enough action right now.
Amen.
You know, I mean, like, literally ring the bell together. If we could literally ring the bell together, there's power in that. And Connie, I want to ask you about that for this Sunday too. What is it that you see us having to do to stand in our power? What do we need to do that I think we have almost forgotten to do, but if we had totally forgotten, you two wouldn't be here. But what do we have to do? What do you say to the multi-generational people that are living on this planet now?
Well, listen, what we're doing and what we did last year was on purpose. This is Black History Month, but what we did is we made a conscious and aggressive effort to make sure that our church was not all Black on the fourth Sunday. Yeah. This Sunday, we have Dr. Catherine Rowe, who is the first female president of the College of William & Mary, who you know is not African-American.
Right.
She is going to lead the students and the alumni of William & Mary out of the historic First Baptist Church, and she is going to ring that bell. What we have to do is we have to continue to serve as an example to not just the state, but the nation, that this is what it's going to take for us to really demonstrate our commitment to unity and the fact that we are one. So we're doing this, and it is on purpose. We hope to do it every year, and we're even trying to expand the moment beyond February. So we're going to continue to make history by, you know, making sure that the Daughters of American Revolution, the Henry Hayes, everybody that comes to visit our church, our historic church, can ring that bell and be seen doing it. So we want to thank you, Dr. Pat, for allowing us to share that with your listeners.
I think we all have to ring the bell. I want to talk with you both about something else that's been near and dear to me. You know, we are coming up on our 15th year in a venue that most people said you people are going to last 15 minutes with all of your positive talk. What the heck is that? I mean, who cares about that? Well, we care about that because it represents an independent freedom of speech. Right. And just because we say positive, it doesn't mean positive is not meaningful. It's meaningful and it's powerful. As we reflect, let's reflect. Some of the greatest spokesperson that came out of, you know, African Americans in this country have been eloquent. Both of y'all are. They have been masterful. They have been powerful, and they have brought forward powerful messages. I want to ask you this. What is the powerful message for our time, for our day? As that bell rings Sunday, what are we going to hold in our consciousness?
Well, one thing I can say, the powerful message would be that if you love freedom, if you love the core values of this country, being one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. If you love those core values, then you will continue to work toward making this country a more perfect union. You can't say what you love because love motivates you to take action. We love our children. So therefore, we take action to protect them, to make sure that they have a future. So therefore, it's going to take all of freedom-loving people here in America and beyond America to work toward having a nation, having a society where we can use our gifts and our talents to not only impact other people in making the world better, but also having that freedom to bring glory to God. So if you really love freedom, then not only will you love it for yourself, you will also love it for your fellow man and for your fellow citizen. And so we're saying it's going to take all of us to create that kind of society, that creative integrated society, which we can all see the differences in each other and celebrate those differences without allowing those differences to be used against us to separate us.
You know, go ahead, Connie. Go ahead.
I was going to say, for me, Dr. Pat, the powerful message is that there is more that unites us as Christians and as Americans than that which divides us. And if we can just remember and hold on to that and demonstrate that and serve as an example, I think that everyone watching in this country and even Pastor Davis's international audience, they will see that we are examples And we want to make sure that the millennials and everyone gets the message that there is more than that unites us than divides us.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I want to talk about here, and I know our time is short, and that I've said and have gotten many emails and letters from the Christian community. And one of the things I've said is there's no room for judgment. There's no room for us to pretend we are the Almighty when it comes to looking at our fellow mankind, people, and saying, you're in and you're out. And this is the one thing for me that I've learned from my mom, this woman that in 1965, all of a sudden had to go visit her aunt in Alabama. And I didn't find out till many, many decades later what that was about. Because my dad would have went berserko, okay? But here we are. Here's what I want to see us really come together when we ring that bell. I do not believe there's room for any divide. There's not room for whether you're Christian, whether you're Jewish, whether you're gay or whether you're straight, whether you're man or whether you're woman. I don't believe there's any room for that. I don't believe that we were put here on this earth so that we can become the Judge Almighty when the Judge Almighty is not on this earth right now. And so how do we shut the conversations down to open ourselves up to say, wait a minute, there's room for everybody. And believe me, I know the Bible just as good as somebody else, but I'm saying even in there, there's room for everybody.
Well, absolutely. And what we have to remind people of is that, as Jesus would say, he lets it rain on the just as well as the unjust. Mm-hmm. The sun shines on the just as well as the unjust. And all of the differences that we find within the human family, he allows the rain. He allows the sun. Everything that God does, he allows it to happen to all of us because we are all of his children. And so if we can start thinking along the lines that God thinks, then we'll begin to see that these are my brothers and sisters. They have differences. They have all kinds of colors, but we're still part of the human family. So we have to continue to lift up heaven's view of humanity, rather than to have the idiosyncrasies that we have toward each other, and start looking from a different perspective and start looking at life through the lenses of God, rather than through the lenses of our politics, through the lenses of those things that divide us. And once we start doing that, I think then we will start humbling ourselves to recognize I'm not the only person on God's earth. There are other people. And they don't look like me, but they still have something in common with me. And as Connie Harshaw has said, we have so much more in common than we have differences.
Let me tell you what I'd like to end with this because I want to ask you both about this. There's a four-letter word that, you know, us girls growing up was introduced to a very young age, but we didn't understand the power of it. We didn't. But I'll tell you, I had this mom. You know, she was absolutely amazing. She died way too young, as far as I'm concerned. But I know that the good Lord took her. I know where she is. But here's the four-letter word that when you ring that bell on Sunday, if we can hold this four-letter word, I think we can heal all. And it's love. I want to ask each of you, what is the power of love in us moving forward as we move forward this year? Because next year when we talk, I want us to be talking about what we achieved here.
Yes. Well, Dr. Pat, I can tell you, I don't know who your mom was, but I think that you must be my sister from another mother.
That's right.
Okay. And the reason why I say that is because my mom said the same thing, that none of us are here to judge, that we serve a loving God, and that God loves everybody. And so I'm reminded when Pastor Davis is in the pulpit on Sunday and he says, listen, we are not perfect, but we all serve a perfect God. And that's a reminder that we must love everyone. He does not make a distinction about what you look like, what you believe, or what you practice. our God is a loving God. And so I got to tell you, for me, that's where the power will be. And we're going to work hard over the next year to make sure that we can report some accomplishment.
I love it. Now, let me ask you, Pastor, you too, please answer this question. But I need to make sure people know. I mean, how can they find out more about this? Is this going to be live streamed? How can we get engaged in the energy, the feeling, and the absolute expansive nature of this, Pastor?
Well, again, let me comment on the love part.
Yes, please.
Love is not what it says. Love is what it does.
Mm-hmm.
God so loved the world that he did something. And what he did, he gave his only begotten son for all of humanity. So love is moving out towards someone else that may not look like you, may not speak like you, may not have your same culture, but you're moving toward them because we're all part of the human family. Connie Harshaw will tell you more about how others can get involved and how they can read more about the church on the website.
Please do. Yes. Thanks, Connie.
Our website is firstbaptistchurch1776.org. So if you would go on that site, you can witness the testimony, you can witness the service, you can witness anything that you'd like to know about our church and our foundation. It's a brand new, refreshed site. Please go in. We have an archive of some sermons for Pastor Davis, Bishop Curry. We have lots of things for you to look at and to be engaged, because we really do want to get the message out.
Yeah. And please, I want to just repeat that for everybody. It is First Baptist Church 1776.org. And by the way, when you go there, you can plan your visit. You can look at how you can participate in the ministries. There's even a tab for my fellow independent news people, a media, and there's outreach. If you don't get involved, you are not going to get, period. If you don't get involved in what's happening in the world, you're just not going to get. It is not going to happen, right? You know, it's just not going to happen. GET for me is of course, I have an acronym. You know that, right? Is God's ever transformation. That's my GET. That's my GET.
That's
it. Beautiful.
That's my GET.
Yeah, that's
last
great.
Question,
yeah.
Personal message. What would each of you love to leave us with? And thank you so much for being you.
Well, I would just like to thank you for having us on your talk show, and just to remind everybody that we can bring about transformation to all of the situations and circumstances in this country. We don't have to accept the way things are. We can get involved. And if you think that your small contributions don't matter, just if everybody would get involved, you would see how much you can make an impact on other people. So don't discount the small things, because the small things, when they spread it across to everybody, it becomes a big thing. So get involved. Let's make this nation a more perfect union. If you can come here to First Baptist Church here in Williamsburg, Virginia, and ring that bell and commit yourself, we would love to have you.
Boy. Connie?
Well, I think that the powerful message for me is that we want you to come on in and continue to help us make history by healing this racial divide in the country, and we want to serve as an example. I think that this is a moment for us to stand up and be counted, and to let people know that we are believers, we love everybody, and we have more in common than that which divides us. So please continue to support us. We thank you so much, Dr. Pat, for having us again, and we look forward to a continued relationship.
And I'm going to end with something my mom used to say to all of us girls, and I'll tell you, it took us a whole bunch of years to figure out half of what my mom said. My mom used to say to us, she used to say, girls, I got to tell you, honey, I got to tell you, hate, do not get through the gate. Hate, do not get through the gate. And we used to look at her like, what is she talking about? I do now know what she meant. Thank you.
Exactly. And even Martin Luther King said that hate is just too much of a burden to bear.
Oh, boy. Yes. I'm telling you. Thank you so very much. Thank you both.
Thank you
for
having
us. You're welcome. Thank you.
Everybody out there, please, please, please Don't lose sight of that website that we've just given you. Let me make sure you have it one more time. Just one more time. You can go and find out more about this. And as I said before, you can do a lot once you get there. First Baptist Church 1776.org. Say hi to everybody when you get there. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
To see your life from an angel's perspective, book a personal consultation with Claire Candy Huff, angelic walk-in angel Ariel at Angel Healing House. Candy provides intuitive counseling, Reiki, and angel readings in person in Los Angeles or nationally and internationally via phone or Skype. She will channel the practical tools you need to transform your life. Call now, 831-277-3716, or visit angelhealinghouse.com.
Are you feeling stuck in unhealthy habits, toxic relationships, or low self-esteem? Do you crave a healthy relationship filled with inspiration? You might just be on the verge of attracting your soulmate. Tune in each month to The Laura Richer Show, where dating coach Laura Richer and co-host matchmaker Peggy Bennett share tools for using your dating breakdown for a relationship breakthrough. For more information, visit richerhealinghypnosis.com.
How often do you find yourself wondering, why me? Learn a new shift in perspective to see how everything that takes place in your life is actually working for you and shifting you towards your own enlightenment. Tune in to Blank Enlightenment Radio with Misty Thompson each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit MistyMThompson.com. That's MistyMThompson.com.
The Knowledge Book, currently studied in 39 countries and 15 languages around the world, accelerates our evolution, takes us out of depression, offers universal truth, protects us, and makes us stronger, both spiritually and physically. So if you are interested in the Knowledge Book, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net and tune in to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You know, I love doing these good news segments because we are learning so much. Thanks to everybody that joins us in these good news segments. And this really is good news. As we are looking at colorectal cancer awareness month, but you know, here we are. Bottom line is, whenever we're talking about what goes on in our body, what goes on internally in our system, we're learning so much. Dr. Rajesh Goswami, joining me here today, is here to talk about, and again, one of our friends from Northwestern Medicine Digestive Health Center, about where we are with this form of cancer, what we're learning, and why I believe it's one of the most untalked about, least known, and yet can be deadly. Thank you, doctor, for joining us. Tell us about, give us sort of the status about where we are as we talk about this month as the awareness month.
Right. It's always difficult, and thanks for having me to talk about this. It's always difficult to sort of relegate this to 1 month because it is a year-long battle we fight. And that's because colon cancer is unfortunately still the second leading cause of cancer death in the United States. And you alluded to this, but it's actually a preventable cancer by and large. If we can get people to be screened for colorectal cancer, we can prevent up to 80% of colon cancer death. And so that's why we really need to highlight the importance of colon cancer screening. And that's in all patients, not just people who have family histories, but everyone is at risk for this disease.
So here we are, and I agree with you, 1 month. It's hard to get something in this 12-minute segment, by the way. But let's talk a little bit about the factors, the risk factors. And the reason I say that is I want to give people an idea of how they can best attest that something like this is going on. Because I think if I'm correct, and you could correct me as you describe them, some of the symptoms may not point to, wow, I should get this checked.
What I recommend to people is to be, first thing, you should not be thinking about the symptoms. You should be thinking about this as you would your overall health. Just like you say, I should be screened for high cholesterol or high blood pressure. You should be screened for colorectal cancer, regardless of whether you have symptoms or not. That said, you know, there are people who will develop symptoms that may make us want to screen them at an earlier age or be rescreened if they've already had a colorectal cancer screening test. Things like blood in the stool, change in the bowel habits, a pain in the abdomen, those things can be signs of colorectal cancer. But our emphasis should be on asymptomatic people should be screened starting at age 45 to 50, depending on risk factors and guidelines you follow. We should be recommending screening in everyone.
I want to ask you this question, and let's get back to the age, because I know the age for people, at least, you know, as I've been following this for myself, the age range has changed. Once upon a time, people said, oh, you can wait until you're X years old. And now I think we're really saying, look, you know, our body is precious to us. We need to be mindful of the things going on. Tell us about the kind of testing or the kind of screening that you're talking about at the moment. I want to make sure people have this kind of information so they even know what questions to ask their doctors.
Sure. And I want to just touch on two parts of that. One is the age question. In general, we recommend starting screening at age 50, although the American Cancer Society has shifted that up to age 45 recently, which some insurers pay for and some don't. Also, in people who are African-American, we also recommend age 45. So I would, you know, have a conversation with your primary care provider about whether 45 or 50 is appropriate for you. That said, if you have a family history of colon cancer, we recommend age 40 or 10 years before your relative got colon cancer. So this is, again, where you need to, is not one size fits all. Everyone needs to be screened, but when you begin, may depend on your history. The second thing is how to get screened. There's two main things you've probably heard of. One is colonoscopy and one is stool-based testing. Colonoscopy is the best test to prevent colon cancer. And that's because colonoscopy can detect colon polyps before they turn into cancer. And then we as colonoscopists can remove those polyps so that you can reduce that risk. The alternative testing is stool-based testing, which is able to detect early colon cancer and some polyps, in which case, if you have a positive test, you would get a colonoscopy. I think it's important not to be dogmatic and say only one test is appropriate. What I tell patients is, if they want to do the most effective test to prevent colon cancer, colonoscopy is the right choice for them. But if they don't want to do a colonoscopy for whatever reason, then we shouldn't just tell them that they're not getting screened. We should then encourage them to get stool-based testing, and if positive, then get a colonoscopy. The most important thing is to get screened somehow.
Let's talk about, and thank you for that, let's talk about advances in medicine. I always love to talk about advances because I got to tell you, Dr. Goswami, I'm always surprised at every time I do one of these interviews, how innovative folks are. And I know that you all at Northwestern are really super innovative. So give us an idea, like, where were we 5 years ago? Where are we now? And what's your vision for where we are going from a treatment and a testing perspective, if you don't mind?
Oh, no, that's a great question. I appreciate you highlighting the work we're trying to do here. I think it's important to understand that it's a top-to-bottom approach, right? So the most important thing we can do is encourage people to get screening. For example, we've done lots of outreach through our electronic health record, trying to make sure people who are delayed on screening can come in for their colonoscopy and, you know, give them video education about why screening is very important. Once patients get a colonoscopy, we've spent a lot of time in things like video coaching, trying to get people to improve their colonoscopy technique to ensure that patients are getting the highest quality colonoscopy. And then once we have a polyp detected, we're trying to make sure that everyone gets those polyps removed well so that they don't turn into cancer later. But in patients who have colon cancer, things like trying to make sure they get minimally invasive surgery to remove the colon cancer, that they all get discussed in a multidisciplinary conference where the cancer doctors, the radiologists, the gastroenterologists all sit around a table and say, what is the best treatment approach for this type of cancer? getting a diagnosis of colon cancer is not a death sentence. There are many treatment options for both early and advanced stage colon cancer, and being at a center where all these options are available is important for people.
I love to talk about this part, and I know we are running short on time, but first, how can people find out more? Please, let's tell folks how they can find out more.
So I think it's important to, again, talk to your primary care provider to make sure that they're always giving you the best options, but we also have a lot of patient-facing information at dhc.nm.org, where we talk a lot about colon cancer prevention and treatment.
Okay, the future. I love asking questions to folks like you about the future, because I know there are a lot of things that, you know, you're looking at or that you've seen or that you'd like to see done differently. And I know you are on the leading edge of that. Please give us a sneak or a glimpse into the future. Where are we going with this? Because the statistics show, right, that we are looking at over 100,000 new cases, right, of colon cancer and close to 50,000 cases of rectal cancer in 2019. So this is not something to kind of sneeze about. What does the future hold for people?
Right. The future is actually very interesting because it can be both very straightforward and then also use the most complex of science. The most important thing for the future is to make sure people get screened. Only 2/3 of people get screened right now. How do we get that to 100%? And so the future part of it is actually just adhering to what makes sense, which is going into the community outreach, making sure people who aren't being screened are screened. It's low tech, but it's actually very important that we actually disseminate that best practice throughout our communities to make sure we go to people where they are and say, have you heard about colon cancer screening and how it can be prevented? But the future is also very high tech, right? There are things to do to detect colon cancer. Right now we know about stool testing, but blood testing is going to be an option in the future as well, where we're trying to detect markers in the blood for early colon cancer. And so maybe just a blood test in the future will be something we can do to detect colon cancer. And then again, simple things like trying to make sure that surgery, when you find a colon cancer, doesn't require a prolonged stay in the hospital, that can be done in laparoscopic fashion. All these sort of things where we're actually potentially removing very early colon cancers during the colonoscopy itself. In the future, it can be very high tech, but I think it's always important for those of us who are in these leading edge hospitals to think, well, the most important thing is that everyone's getting at least the most basic care, because that's where we really lack right now. We're not getting everyone to get screened.
Wow. You know, I look at this, I look at my family history. I think about my grandmother who passed away at a very early age from, she died from a cancer of this kind, we now know. But what I'm thinking about too as well is the best of treatment. In the few minutes we have left, have our treatments for this, have they been advanced? And what I mean by that is, once upon a time when you heard this, everybody cringed. Where are we in the treatment realm?
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate, and it's unfortunate about your grandmother, but we're very fortunate now that we have a lot more treatment options. Again, that colon cancer, even when metastatic, meaning not just in the colon, is potentially curable now, because we've really gotten advances in surgery for removing this disease that's distant. And the chemotherapy options are dramatically different now than they used to be. And so you want to be in a place that considers all the treatment options. You never want to be treated by just one doctor, right? You want to be treated by a team of doctors, and that they trust each other to say, you know, maybe surgery isn't the best choice right now. Maybe chemotherapy is the best option. Maybe radiation oncology is the best option. There are so many leading edge options. But that doesn't mean everyone should have that leading edge option every time. Maybe it's just the basic straightforward options. So they always say, you know, if you're a hammer, everything's a nail. You need to be having different options so you can think about what the best treatment option for your patient is. And that's where going to a center that has a lot of these options available, including clinical trials, is important, so that they don't say, well, there's nothing left to offer. There's generally some other option for you if you go searching for it.
Wow. Thank you so very, very much. One last question. Would you mind please telling folks how they can find out more? And I would love to ask you your personal message. What would you like to leave us with today?
So I think just the most important thing I can tell people is, again, everyone is at risk for colon cancer. So even if you've been screened, the most important thing you can do is tell your loved ones and friends that it wasn't a big deal. Please get screened for colorectal cancer. It's such a common cancer, but we can prevent it as a team. And anyone who wants more information about digestive health, including colon cancer prevention and treatment, can come to our website at dhc.nm.org.
Thank you all. Thank you for joining us. Thank you all for joining us today. We're going to take a short break. And by the way, please, please go check the website out. Lots more information than what we have to and are able to do in 15 minutes. Dr. Goswami, thank you so much. I know that you are back-to-back-to-back-to-back interviews. And so I commend you for being the hero around this.
Well, no, thank you for letting your listeners know how important this is. And I hope we all get screened. Thank you.
Yeah, let's all get screened. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.